Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Imagine for a moment that about half of your genetic instruction book isn't, you know, original content, but rather these ancient repetitive snippets of DNA. People sometimes call them jumping genes.
Right. And for decades, these elements were often just dismissed, like genomic baggage, basically.
It's just junk. But what if some of these mysterious passengers are actually active architects? Crucial, maybe, for building what makes us uniquely human.
What's fascinating here is how this perspective is, well, it's rapidly changing. Today, we're going to dive into a truly groundbreaking study. It reveals a surprising truth. These enigmatic elements, specifically a type called line 1 retrotransposons, or L1s, they're not just sitting idly by. They're actually highly active in our earliest cells. And they seem to play a vital role in the intricate process of early human brain development.
Wow. So this isn't just about obscure biology, then. It's really about uncovering a hidden layer of complexity in our own genetic code. How could these jumping genes shape our evolution? And what might it mean for our health if they're disrupted? Get ready for a deep dive that might just change how you think about your own DNA. Okay, so today we're celebrating the really pioneering work of a collaborative research team. It was led by Johan Jakobsen from Lund University.
Yes, and with significant contributions from places like the Aligning Science across Parkinson's Collaborative Research Network, NYU Langone Health, and the University of Cambridge, too.
Quite a team.
Absolutely. Their detailed multi-omics approach has, profoundly advanced our understanding of the unexpected functional roles these so-called jumping genes, these L1s, play in human development. It's really impressive work.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit. When we think about the human genome, we usually picture this, neat blueprint for life. But you're telling me that a huge portion of it, like half, is made up of these transposable elements, or TEs.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Our genome consists of at least 50% transposable elements. It's quite packed. And traditionally, these L1s, they've been viewed as potential threats, things that could mess with genomic integrity. So it was widely assumed they were basically shut down, transcriptionally silenced by epigenetic mechanisms.
Like DNA methylation.
Exactly, like DNA methylation. Yeah. The idea was to prevent them from causing harm.
But that simplistic view,
yeah,
it's being challenged now, right?
Precisely. Recent studies have begun to reveal that some TEs are actually selectively expressed, particularly during early development, which suggests they might contribute to important cellular functions after all.
Okay.
And among these, long interspersed nuclear elements 1, or L1s, are especially significant, partly because they are the most abundant, making up roughly 17% of our genome.
17%? That's huge.
It is. And they're the only autonomously mobilizing family of T in humans, meaning they can copy and paste themselves.
And they've been around for a while in our evolutionary history.
Oh, indeed. L1s colonize the human genome in different ways. This actually lets scientists approximate their evolutionary age. So we have primate-specific L1s and even human-specific ones like L1HS, L1PA2, and L1PA3. These are relatively young, evolutionarily speaking.
And they act like little genes themselves, with promoters and proteins.
That's a good way to think about it. These L1s are transcribed from a specific promoter, their own on switch. And they can even produce proteins essential for their mobilization.
So what does this all mean for their potential function then?
Well, importantly, L1 antisense promoters, remember those reverse start buttons. They can also act as alternative promoters for our protein-coding genes. This can create unique, non-canonical isoforms, like different versions of a gene's product.
Okay, interesting.
Now, studies in mice have shown L1s are highly expressed during early development and play roles in things like neural differentiation. But the functional relevance of L1 expression in early human development has remained poorly understood.
And that's a critical distinction, because human L1s are different?
Exactly. Human L1s differ significantly from those in mice. We have species-specific insertions and distinct regulatory elements. You can't just assume what happens in mice happens in us.
So given this complex background, how did this team actually investigate the functional role of L1s in human development? This sounds like a monumental task.
It truly was. The researchers employed a sophisticated multi-omics approach. Really state-of-the-art stuff. They combined various techniques like short and long-read RNA sequencing
to see what genes were active.
Right, and targeted epigenomic profiling called CTNUN.
To check the on and off switches.
Precisely. Plus advanced long-reads DNA methylation analysis using Oxford Danpor technologies. Very detailed. This comprehensive data allowed for tailored bioinformatic analyses to make sense of just this vast amount of genomic information.
Okay, that's a lot of data. But the real trick must be how they specifically manipulated these L1s, given how, you know, repetitive they are.
That's right. A critical innovation was their optimized CRISPR interference, or CRISPR system. Because L1s are so repetitive, targeting them with precision is a major challenge, like finding one specific book in a library where all the covers look the same.
Yeah.
So they designed two specific 20 base pair guide RNAs. Think of them as super precise addresses. These target the 5-foot untranslated region, basically the control panel of young, full-length L1s, right near their transcription start site.
So it's like a highly accurate off switch just for the active L1s, leaving the inactive ones alone.
Precisely. This system, co-expressed with a transcriptional repressor and a GFP selection marker so they could track the cells, It allowed for highly efficient and specific silencing of L1 transcription.
And they tested this in stem cells?
In human-induced pluripotent stem cells, or HIPSCs, yes, and also in human cerebral organoids. They validated this system rigorously, too. Showed enrichment of the CRISPR protein at the target sites, a loss of active promoter marks, and a gain of repressive marks. Crucially, all confined just to the targeted L1 regions. This demonstrated exceptional on-target specificity.
Impressive. And they used human cerebral organoids, too, to mimic brain development.
Yes. The organoids served as a crucial 3D model. They were cultured for 15 days to represent early neural development. This allowed them to study L1s in a more physiologically relevant context with the human brain, not just in flat cell cultures.
So with these powerful tools, what did they actually discover about L1s in human stem cells and developing brains? Here's where it gets really interesting, right?
Absolutely. They found that thousands of these hominode-specific L1 integrants, particularly those evolutionarily young ones like L1HS, L1PA2, and L1PA3, are highly expressed in human iPSCs. This is just background noise. These are active elements, very active.
And this expression lined up with the epigenetic state.
Exactly. It correlated with an active epigenetic state, meaning the presence of active promoter histone marks like H3K4ME3, and crucially, the absence of DNA methylation at the L1 promoters. The off switch was off.
And when they flipped that off switch using CRISPR, what happened?
Well, the optimized CRISPR system successfully silenced virtually all active L1s. It worked really well. This led to a complete loss of L1 RNA and the associated L1 protein, or F1P. Which confirmed the tool's efficiency and specificity.
Okay.
Interestingly, though, they found that L1 expression is not essential just for maintaining pluripotency in HIPSCs.
So the stem cells were okay without them?
Yeah. These cells remained healthy, proliferative, and could still differentiate into all three germ layers. So L1s aren't needed just for stemness.
That's a key distinction, differing from some earlier studies, maybe.
Yes, it clarifies things, but what about the impact on other genes? That was the big question.
Right.
This is a major finding. L1 silencing primarily affected nearby gene expression. Get this. 61 of the 99 significantly downregulated genes were located within 50 kilobases of a silenced L1.
Wow, that close. So it strongly implicates a cis-acting effect,
yeah,
affecting neighbors.
Exactly. They identified nearly 100 genes, about a third of which are protein coding, that seem to depend on L1 promoter activity.
So what does this all mean then? L1s acting as alternative promoters, is that what's happening?
That's precisely what they showed. L1s act as alternative promoters, often using their antisense promoter, that backward-facing switch. They use it to drive the expression of hominoid-specific isoforms of protein-coding genes like ALAPOR2 and PBP1R1C and long non-coding RNAs such as LNC00648.
And many of these L1-driven genes are already known to be involved in brain development.
That's right. It connects L1 activity directly to known developmental pathways.
That's remarkable. Okay, now for the cerebral organoids, the mini brains, how did L1s behave during early brain development there?
So in the cerebral organoids, L1s were still expressed, but at lower levels overall compared to the HIPSCs. And this correlated with an overall increase in DNA methylation at L1 promoters as differentiation progressed. The off switches started coming on.
Makes sense as cells specialize.
It does. However, individual L1 loci were surprisingly variable. Some were fully silenced, while others remained highly expressed. This really demonstrates highly locus-specific regulation. It's not one size fits all for L1s.
Right, each one is different. And the most impactful result, what happens to brain development when L1s are silenced in the organoids?
Okay, so L1 silencing in cerebral organoids did not alter the overall cell types formed. It didn't completely block differentiation pathways.
Okay.
However, the L1 CRISPR organoids were reproducibly and significantly smaller.
Smaller?
Yes. This difference emerged around 10 days of differentiation and became more pronounced by day 15. And at the molecular level, they observed transcriptome changes in neural progenitor cells consistent with altered neural development.
So the building blocks were affected?
Kind of. Intriguingly, many genes associated with neuronal growth and neurogenesis, like AKAP6 and NTRK2, were actually upregulated.
Upregulated? That seems counterintuitive. The organoids are smaller.
It does at first glance.
Mm-hmm.
But it suggests that L1s are critical for the appropriate progression and timing of early neural differentiation, and specifically for the crucial expansion phase of neural progenitor cells. Maybe silencing L1s messes up the timing, causing premature or altered differentiation signals. So we connect this to the bigger picture. These findings fundamentally change our understanding of L1 retrotransposons. They are not merely genetic relics, you know. They're dynamic components that add a crucial layer of hominoid-specific transcriptional complexity, especially during early human development and neural differentiation.
So it really challenges that old junk DNA idea.
It strongly challenges the long-held view of L1s as purely junk DNA, yes.
So these ancient elements are actually integrated into our most complex developmental processes, particularly brain development.
Absolutely. The study highlights how young, hominoid-specific L1s can escape repressive epigenetic mechanisms in stem cells.
Mm.
But then they are dynamically silenced in a context-dependent way during differentiation. And crucially, the data emphasize that we cannot treat L1s as a single uniform family. We have to look at each L1 locus individually.
Because each one is influenced by where it landed in the genome.
Precisely. Its integration site and the surrounding genomic context seem key to its regulation.
And this cis-acting role, where L1s act as alternative promoters for nearby genes, creating unique human-specific isoforms, that's a really profound mechanism.
It truly is. This mechanism wires L1s directly into the transcriptional network of human pluripotent stem cells.
Mm.
Moreover, those functional differences, especially the smaller organoid size and the altered neural differentiation timing, it strongly suggests L1s could have contributed to the evolutionary expansion of the human brain.
Wow. That's a fascinating parallel with differences seen between human and non-human primate organoids, right? The growth rate.
Exactly. It fits that picture quite well.
This raises an important question, though. What are the implications for human health? Neurodevelopmental disorders, perhaps?
Well, many of the genes found to be dysregulated when L1s were silenced, especially those upregulated ones, they have been implicated in neurodevelopmental and psychiatric disorders.
Hmm.
So this suggests that even maybe modest alterations in young, full-length L1 activity during early brain development could potentially lead to neurodevelopmental defects, particularly those impacting developmental timing.
And since L1s vary between people.
Exactly. Considering that L1s are highly polymorphic within the human population, variations in specific L1 copies, or maybe their regulatory regions, could influence the etiology of brain disorders. It's a new avenue to explore.
So what are the next steps for research then? And what are some of the limitations of this study?
Good question. The study acknowledges that while the CRISPR tool is highly specific for the L1 promoter-driven transcripts, it doesn't target all L1-derived transcripts like those read-throughs from other genes. And a major limitation currently is that this CRISPR approach can't definitively distinguish between the cis-acting mechanisms affecting nearby genes and potential trans-acting mechanisms.
Where L1 RNAs or proteins might act more broadly.
Right. We need new molecular tools to fully untangle those different potential regulatory functions. That's a key next step.
And the model systems themselves, organoids and stem cells, they have inherent limitations too, I suppose.
Precisely. While HIPPSCs and cerebral organoids are powerful models, they're still simplified versions of complex human development. And they come with their own experimental variations. But despite these caveats, the core message is clear. L1s should no longer be neglected in genomic investigations. They really must be considered as individual loci in studies of human evolution and potentially the genetic causes of disorders. So the central insight from this deep dive is really transformative. These evolutionarily young line 1 retrotransposons, they're not genomic junk. They are crucial active players in human development. They act as alternative promoters, adding this hominoid-specific layer of complexity to our transcriptome, which seems essential for the precise timing of early brain development.
So what does this mean for how we perceive the non-coding, or maybe we should stop calling it that, parts of our genome? And how might these ancient elements continue to shape our future understanding of brain development and disease? This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.